Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Community of Grace and the Bible study in the book of Ruth. Let's open up in prayer and we'll get into it here. So, Father, we thank you for our time today. God, we thank you for these stories in your word. We thank you for the story of the book of Ruth and all the things that are in it, God. I pray that you would just guide our conversation, that you would just guide everyone's hearing of what we talk about today, Lord, and I pray that it would speak into our lives and into our situations and just give us your insight into what's going on in our world. And we just pray all these things in your name. Amen. So we're continuing today in the book of Ruth, and Ruth is actually the story of Naomi, who has been through a difficult time with the death of her husband and her two sons after they left Bethlehem in Judah to go into the land of Moab. Now, as I began to prepare for this lesson, I started to dig into the passages and I began to feel like there was more in chapter 1, something that we either didn't uncover or we needed to put more emphasis on than we already did. And so I want to stay in chapter 1 today. And I want to look at it a bit more at what's there. So as I said, Naomi's husband and her two sons, they leave Bethlehem in Judah, and they go into the land of Moab. So the question is, why would they do this being Hebrews? And this is walking away from the land of promise to do this. And so why would they go into a land that's occupied by the people that they're not supposed to be having relationship with, to live where there's people that they're not supposed to be associating with? And so one of the reasons is because there was a famine in the promised land. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this over the last 2 weeks. Then the Bible doesn't give us any details about the famine, but we also know that the story of Ruth takes place in the time of the judges. And from that, and from this, some have guessed that this famine could be from raiders such as Midian or the Amalekites, as we studied in the book of Judges in the story of Gideon, that they not only raided the crops, but they would devastate them. And so would that now constitute a famine if the fields were wiped out? There, however, could have been an actual famine. And although there's no other record or mention of a famine at this time, except for here in this passage, but the time of Judges was a time of good and bad in Israel. It was a time of moral corruption. Israel had blended in with the people of the land that they were supposed to have driven out. Even their priesthood was corrupted. There was injustice, there was lying, there was stealing, there was cheating, there was selfishness, there was greed, there was violence, there was murder, there was homosexuality, there was prejudice, there were wars, there was civil war. And no, I'm not talking about America, I'm talking about, this is supposed to be the nation of Israel here. And now there's a famine. And a famine is the holding back of the rains, which was something that God did in the face of wickedness. In fact, Judges is the story of the descent of Israel. And so we would see throughout the book of Judges the rising up of judges who would liberate Israel when they became desperate enough in these times of corruption and having turned from God into depravity. And these judges were godly people, or at least part of the time they were, and that would rise up or be called up by God to stir the people to righteousness and rally them to oppose their oppressors. And God would also intervene and do miraculous things to help them. But after several years of peace, after that, the people would settle back into their lifestyle of corruption because of the Canaanite influences that they still had and allowed and had blended with. And so this good-bad cycle would repeat over and over and over again. I want to look at a passage in Deuteronomy 32. And this is something that Moses spoke. This was Moses' song to the whole assembly of Israel. And this is at the book of Deuteronomy. And this is going to be before they're going to go take the land. They're going to go enter the promised land. And so this is like right before the beginning of the book of Judges. And it says in verse 15, it says, "But Jeshurun," and Jeshurun is a poetic name for Israel. It says, "grew fat and kicked. You are grown fat, thick, and sleek. Then he forsook God who made him, and scorned the rock of his salvation. They made him jealous with strange gods, with abominations. They provoked him to anger. They sacrificed to demons who were not God, to gods whom they have not known. New gods who came lately, whom your fathers did not dread. You neglected the rock who begot you, and forgot the God who gave you birth. The Lord saw this and spurned them. Now, do we not see this in Judges? You know, because of the provocation of his sons and daughters, then he said, I will hide my face from them. I will see what their end shall be, for they are a perverse generation, sons in whom is no faithfulness. They have made me jealous with what is not God. They have provoked me to anger with their idols, so I will make them jealous with those who are not a people. I will provoke them to anger with a foolish nation, for a fire is kindled in my anger and burns to the lowest part of Sheol, and consumes the earth with its yield, and sets on fire the foundations of the mountains. I will heap misfortunes on them. Which, does that not sound like what happened to Naomi? I will use my arrows on them. They will be wasted by famine, and consumed by plague and bitter destruction, and the teeth of beasts, and I will send upon them with the venom of crawling things of the dust. Outside the sword will bereave, and inside terror, both young men and virgin, the nursling with the man of gray hair. I would have said, I will cut them to pieces. I will remove the memory of them from men. Had I not feared the provocation by the enemy, that their adversaries would misjudge, that they would say, our hand is triumphant, and the Lord has not done all this. For they are a nation lacking in counsel, and there is no understanding in them. Would that they were wise, that they understood this, that they would discern their future. So this here is the first mention of a famine since these words, what is in Ruth here. And again, these words were spoken by Moses right before they enter into the promised land. So now there's a thinking that Naomi's husband Elimelech left Bethlehem in Judah and went to Moab because of the famine. Or was it because their faith was not strong enough to trust God to take care of them where they were in the land that God had given them? You know, we don't know. But there's these discussions about this. Now, Elimelech means my God is king. And as we'll see in chapter 4, Elimelech owned land. Naomi, her name means pleasant, delightful, my joy. And Moab means of my father. And Moab was the son of Lot, who was born from one of Lot's two daughters, both getting him drunk and sleeping with him out of fear of their family not living on. So the result was the birth of Moab and Ben-Ammi, which is Ammon. But also Moab is referred to in Psalms 108:9 by God through David as a washbowl. Bethlehem means house of bread, and Judah means praise. So the man whose name means God is king runs from the land of praise and bread to the washbowl or the garbage can in a tough, discouraging time. So why does a landowner leave his land behind to live somewhere else? And there he goes to a land of Israel's enemies. I mean, this is the land of Balaam. This is the land of you know, we were looking at Judges 3. You know, Eglon came from Moab. You know,
weren't the Israelites supposed to have already conquered this area by now, or no? Was this not part of where they had? I know it took a while for them to conquer the area, but was this land not previously supposedly conquered? Or no, as an area that the Israelites hadn't tried to take over yet.
No, it's on the other side.
Yes,
it's on the other side.
Moses conquered.
Moses did. Yeah,
but that didn't mean they kept it.
Yeah,
and
okay.
So parts of Moab had Israelis, and okay. Parts of Moab. Yeah. In fact, Moab wasn't necessarily a country; it was all mixed up. So going to Moab was. You know, what does that exactly mean?
Yeah, because, and so you have like some of Manasseh over there and the other two over there. You know, they say, you know, we want this land. We don't want to go on the other side. We want to stay here.
Okay.
So you have all that over there.
One thing with the wash basin thing that I came across was it described it as the basin where they would wash the dust off their feet.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Bowl of dirty water.
Yeah. Specifically the...
Yeah, yeah. Now, perhaps going back to, you know, Elimelech and his motivations, perhaps his land was barren because of the famine, you know, therefore unfruitful, or maybe it was besieged. You know, we don't know. We don't have any details.
We do know that famine is frequently a judgment of God.
Yes,
and Israel
exactly.
called on the judgment of God frequently by their unfaithfulness.
Right, exactly. Judges 21:25. In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. So whatever the reason was for him doing what he did, Elimelech leaves and he does what seems right in his own eyes.
Like Abraham did when he went to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All this land is yours, but he endangers his wife by going to Egypt.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, because he's afraid that the people that were in that land might take his wife.
Egypt. He's in Egypt.
Yeah,
and kill him.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and that's a whole nother.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother story. But anyway, so
but
he.
But it was another famine.
Yeah.
And another thing. That was that wise Abraham.
Yeah, really. Although it did work out well for him in the end.
Yes.
But yeah. Anyway, and so Elimelech, he goes to Moab to avoid hardship, and he runs right into hardship. You know, and it's consistent with Israel in you know in this time. So. Now we have his two sons, Mahlon, whose name means sickly. Now he was, you know, he was married to Ruth, and Ruth means befriend or friendship, and Chilion, you know, his name means wasting away or weak, and he married Orpha. Orpha's name means stiff-necked, and the two sons were Ephrathites. They were natives of Bethlehem, and so. But here's the other thing about this is the names of these sons are Canaanite names. So why is that? What does that say about Hebrew parents that give their kids Canaanite names? I mean, does that not also suggest a compromise? You know, now I realize that in Hebrew names sometimes they represent the person and they may not have been the actual names. And since this story was written much later, and maybe the names were assigned to these characters, but maybe the names were assigned to describe them, you know. But either way, their names raise a question, you know. So, just kind of jumping off that for a minute, do you guys know what your names mean?
Peace.
Fred means peace.
Mm-hmm. Peace. Peaceful.
Okay. Peaceful. Okay.
Parakeet. At least that's what I'm named after.
What's it mean?
I have no idea. That's
yeah.
Patrick, name meetings that a lot of people put a lot of clout in that. I don't, you know, people that want like ancestry. Oh, don't you need to know? I don't care if I'm 1% this or that. It doesn't affect who I am today.
I think it has something to do with being noble, Patrick.
I believe you're right, but. But I was named after my dad's parakeet, so. Mm.
House wolf.
Is that what Randy means?
Yeah, or indicating a defender of the house.
Okay. So, does what those names mean describe you? For those of you that know what your name means, does it describe you?
I don't know. I seldom think about it.
Huh.
I think there's something to it.
Something to it?
Okay. Depends on who you talk to. Some of my former coworkers would say no. Other people would say yes.
Okay.
Well, I think with my church history, I've often been an usher and felt like, and often felt led to pray for the building and protection.
Okay. So Ruth chapter 1, verse 3 says this. It says, then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They took for themselves Moabite women as wives. The name of the one was Orpha, and the name of the other Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and the women and the woman was bereaved of her two children and her husband. So once in Moab, once they're in Moab, at that point, Elimelech dies. Now it's just Naomi and the two boys. You know, then they take Moabite women, they take wives, and they lived in the land for around 10 years. Then the boys die. And Naomi is left with the Moabite daughter-in-laws. And so some would say that the reason that Elimelech and the two sons died is due to their lack of faith and not trusting God and running off into the heathen land of Moab, and the sons of Elimelech marrying women from Moab, which Hebrews were not supposed to be doing. This was a violation of what they were supposed to be doing. But, you know, I wonder if it was more. I mean, would Naomi have gone back to Judah on hearing that there's now food in Israel if Elimelech and the sons were still alive? I mean, we don't know. But I wonder if they would have said, no, we're staying here. You know, we don't know. So next question I have for you guys is this: is what has been the consequences for bad decisions that you've made? Assuming you've made any bad decisions.
One day I bought a bicycle and decided I'm going to ride to Oakland. I'm going to take this road around Lake Chabot and just keep on going. I don't think my knee ever recovered completely. You know, sometimes you do things in childhood, you know, the body never recovers.
Yeah, they sound like a good idea, and they're not. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have several of those.
Regret, sounds like. You make a bad decision, you have regret.
Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't have to be regret. It can just be an honest realization. If I hadn't done that, that was a poor decision.
Yeah. But his question is, what do you get when you make a bad decision? I'd have to say you probably get a little regret over your bad decision.
I've seen numerous occasions of negative consequences to letting the old man off the altar and slipping back into old habits. The old joke. That's the problem with a living sacrifice. Keeps crawling off the altar.
Okay.
I've heard too many of those in my life.
Okay, verse 6 of Ruth 1. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the land of Moab, for she had heard in the land of Moab that the Lord had visited his people in giving them food. So she departed from the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Moab. So...
land of Judah.
So, I kind of wrestled with this part, because... in reading the different commentators on this, they differ on this. Okay, some saw Naomi as a Hebrew woman who was married to a man that made a bad decision, and that she didn't see it either. And others saw Naomi as a woman of unshakable faith that didn't understand some of the elements, but they didn't understand some of the elements of this story. In other words, they would say, no, this is who Naomi was, and they just painted her in this tremendous light, but then there's all these elements of the story and said, well, we don't know what to do with those. And so this really left me unsettled. And so I personally do not see Elimelech and Naomi as bad people, but like Israel in this time, I wonder if they too did not lose their way. I mean, good people lose their way at times, right? And then as they lost their way, they made some bad decisions. I mean, this is in the time of the judges, where everybody was making bad decisions and everybody had lost their way. And I think one of the reasons why it's mentioned here maybe is to give us a context for this. is that they're basically just doing what everybody was doing. You know, it was a bad time. It was a really bad time. And as was seen in Judges, there is doing some things that you know, there were times in Judges where they did some things that were actually better decisions, but sometimes the reasoning was wrong. You know, as we look through these stories, and so Naomi goes to the land of her. She goes back to the land of her godly inheritance, but she goes because she hears that there's food, and that God has visited His people. But we're not given details of what that means. You know, other than the fact that there's food, and that they've come into.
Well, then the other thing is she owns land. Who worked the land in the last 10 years to get the food where it's?
We don't know. We're not given any of that. Well, we're not given any details.
It had to be redeemed.
Well, that's
if we look forward. So somebody had to have bought it or whatever. And,
well, that's going to happen in chapter 4.
No, but somebody would have had to buy it for it to have to be redeemed.
Yeah, but anyway, so if there was a famine. You know, and so it's obviously now it's over now, because now there is a barley harvest, as we're going to find out at the end of this chapter. But you know, was this due to the victory of one of the judges? You know, or was this just, you know, the famine ended? You know, we don't know. But in looking at Naomi's decision to return to Judah, there's something wrong with it. Do you see what it is?
Well, she goes part way. Is part of it that she went part way with her daughters-in-law? Then stops and says, "You two need to go back."
No, but I'm going to get to that.
I saw your question and I said, "What's not to? This is a good decision. What's not to like about it?"
Okay.
Seems like accepting defeat, but it does seem like a good decision.
Okay, so she goes back because. Because there's food now, okay? And again, that sounds like a good decision. But there's no realizing that she is in a place where she's not supposed to be, and she doesn't repent of that. There is no, God, I've come into a land that we were not supposed to be in. There's no acknowledgement of that. There's no, God, forgive me for that. There's none of that. It's like, oh, there's food, I'm going back. There's no, I'm going back to the land that you told us to be in. There's no mention.
Well, we don't know all of her thought processes, but what you're saying matches the things she has said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
This be like somebody that says, "I'll never go back to you. I'll never go back to you. I'll never go back to you," and the "you" rends $1 million, and all of a sudden it's like, "Hi." Mm-hmm.
You know,
remember me? Your favorite third cousin, three times removed. We used to play together.
And again, and this is consistent with what was going on in the rest of the nation. They just didn't see the things that they were supposed to see. I mean, everybody was doing what was right in their own eyes, and it was wrong. And nobody saw it.
I'm guessing they were really bad off, poor, where they were.
Mm-hmm.
And there was at least the law of God and neighbor and family back home.
Mm-hmm.
The connection was... coming in my mind is, for now, how many Christians, when things get rough or things are not going the way they want, will go back to the old or go back to something else? How many churches have said, well, we want to grow. We don't like our numbers, so what we're going to do is we're going to go into the world of standards.
Mm-hmm.
And find themselves in places they shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But she says that God has punished me, so I'm back. So maybe she did realize.
No, she doesn't. No, she says God has. She goes, I'm back, and I mean, it's not the same as.
She said, changed my name, right? Like
she changed her name. We'll get to that. Okay. So then. So then notice that that they start to head for the promised land, and it's on their way. This is the part you're getting to, you were talking about a minute ago. They're on their way that Naomi urges that Ruth and Orpah to return home to their parents in Moab and find husbands there. So she decides this after they've started out already. So it's like, why doesn't she do that sooner? You know, I mean, did she just react to the news of Judah and then she just impulsively starts to go, and then she starts to think as she's going and she goes, oh, I'm going back to Judah here. Okay, I got to think this through. And then, oh, I got Moabite daughters. Oh, maybe they better stay. We don't know. But at first, neither of them want to leave her. At first, neither of them did. Okay, you know, they're both willing to go back with her to her people. And we have Naomi going, giving a good enough argument with that, and it persuades Orpah to leave. But Ruth chooses to stay with Naomi. And it's here that we have this covenant that Ruth makes with Naomi. And this looks like some type of, we talked about this last week, it looks like some type of maybe a conversion experience has happened. But as I thought more about this, I'm not so sure this was a conversion experience, but something is definitely happening with her. Mm-hmm. And so as the, I think something was starting with Ruth here, but I think that it was something that was beginning and growing and developing as the story goes. And I'll get to more of that in a minute.
Interrupt or?
Yeah.
The one thing, as I was reviewing this today, is the word that keeps coming up everywhere is identity. So this is a statement of identity. This is who I am now.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Naomi or
Ruth? Ruth. And what I would say at this point is, instead of it being like the beginning, the seeds, I see it instead where Ruth has already been through that process, and this is how she now identifies herself. That would be my opinion.
I would say that she started to make some decisions here, but I think it's going to develop and it's going to take more of a form as we go. Okay, but I'll talk about that in a second.
You asked why on the way, and the realization that she really has nothing for the daughters.
Right.
For their sake.
Right.
Now, of course, we question this, sending them back to their gods.
Yeah.
You know, where's your faith, Naomi?
Yeah.
But I think also she's beginning to visualize coming into Bethlehem.
Mm-hmm.
And these two daughters, they're an embarrassment. A reminder of her failure.
Hmm.
You know, I'm bad enough by myself, and I've got these two Moabite women. How do I explain this?
Mm-hmm.
This does not look good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in those days, though, she would have followed her husband because that's where he went.
Right.
So the decision really wasn't hers to go or stay.
Right.
So I don't know that she would feel the responsibility of being in the wrong place, maybe that she wasn't mm-hmm. supposed to be, because she didn't really have much say in the decision to be there in the first place. But now, you know, I don't know how long she stayed after. Well, I guess it shows how long, you know, that has.
Well, they were there for 10 years.
10 years,
but
yeah.
You're right. After the sons died, it doesn't say. Second son died January 3rd.
Right,
now it's the 5th. We got to go back.
And especially we don't know when her husband died in that 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm guessing she's
just
hungry.
Just another
too.
Thought.
You're going to go where your tummy is telling you to go.
But it doesn't say that she said, well, I'm in a place where, you know, the Lord never. You know, she doesn't say that, though, so we really don't know.
Well,
you know, whether she realized she wasn't supposed to be there in the first place or not, but she was kind of stuck there, I guess.
Your statement.
I don't know.
Begs the question, what are you ruled by? Are you ruled by your stomach or are you ruled by your faith?
Yeah.
Because times are going to get ugly, uglier than they already are. And are we going to count on God or are we going to count on somebody else saying, oh, we'll take care of it for you?
Well, we can question Naomi's everything, but the decision to go back was good.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Verse 16. But Ruth said, "Don't urge me to leave." Don't urge me to leave you or turn back from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me, and worse if anything but death parts you and me." And when she saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more to her. So, going back to verse 10, it says, and this is back when she was talking to them previously, and they said to her, "No, but we will surely return with you to your people." So, somewhere between verse 10 and verse 16, something has happened to where they go from both of them saying, "We will return with you," to "your people," to Ruth saying, once Oprah has left, "Your people are my people and your God my God." So something happened there, okay? And of course, you know, the picture of Orpha returning is also a picture of returning to the world, which represents unbelievers and false gods and so forth.
Well, it doesn't say, but it's possible at the beginning that it was Orpah says we're going to be with you and your people, but then, you know, she changed her mind, or maybe that was speaking.
Naomi talked her out of it. Naomi gives this argument in there and talks her out of it.
It's like, okay, but Ruth may never have said, you know, this may have been Ruth that was saying this, and Orpah never spoke up, and then when Naomi put out her argument of why they need to go, Orpah went, okay, I'm going. So all this, we want to be with you and your people.
Good point.
Could have been Ruth the whole time, and Orpah never said anything until she kissed her and said goodbye. When Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye.
Well, it says, 10 starts out, and they said to her. Not she said to her, they said to her.
Yeah.
So this is both of them saying this. And then something happens, and then Naomi gives this argument, and Orpah goes, okay, I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So she was starting to go, but again, not in total surrender. It's like, okay, we'll go back to your people. Okay, it's like, okay, we don't see that more, owning it more, until we hear Ruth's words after that. Mm-hmm. But Naomi's words kind of get her off the hook, and she goes. And so, here's the other thing about this. Naomi is supposed to be a Hebrew. You know, she's not supposed to be in Moab in the first place. Yeah. You know, her son should not have married Moabite women. And now that she's returning home to the land of her God, she's going to encourage her daughters, who they all appear to have formed a very close bond with each other, to just encourage her daughters to go back to the Moab way of life. And not come with her to the land of God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm going, wait a minute, hold it, you know.
It's not like the land of God is acting that way either.
Well, yeah, but still, it's the point of this is where I'm supposed to be, and now that you're part of our family, it's like, no, go back to your old way, and don't come with me into a better way.
This is,
you know,
where I think where some commentators will say that this is a test.
Yeah, I read that. I read that. Yeah.
It's a test from God, not necessarily from Naomi.
Yeah. Yeah, Naomi's.
Some
have said that. Yeah. Just because someone writes it in a commentary doesn't mean they're all correct.
I tried to phrase it.
Yeah.
I think Naomi is, whatever her foundation of belief, right now she's in a place of bitterness and hurt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's in process. She's in process right now, and she's on the unhappy part of process.
Yeah.
That's how I read it. Okay.
We have found throughout Book of Judges especially, that when do people find themselves wanting to address this, their state of affairs, when they're desperate?
Exactly. So, as I said, Naomi means pleasant, delightful, or my joy, and she goes to Moab, and I, like I said earlier, I think maybe she lost herself. But I think this whole process is going to bring her back. Okay, verse 11. But Naomi said, "Return, my daughters. Why should you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may be your husbands?" And again, you know, we talked about this before. She said, "I can't have any more kids. I can't give you another husband." You know, verse 12. "Return, my daughters. Go, for I am too old to have a husband." You know, she's like, "I'm too old to even remarry." So, and she goes on to say, "If I said I have hope, if I should even have a husband tonight and also bear sons, would you therefore wait until they're grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is harder for me than for you, for the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me." Now, in that society, being married, having children was everything. It was everything. Naomi left the land of promise and she lost everything. You know, she lost herself, I think. She, you know, her walk with God is questionable, I would put it. She has no hope. The hand of God has left her. You know, but the reality is actually she left him. When she went to Moab, she's walking away from what God wanted.
Well, she could count. When she went to Moab, she was counting on her husband.
Right.
Then when her husband died, she's counting on her sons.
Right.
When her sons die, she certainly can't count on her daughters. She considers them a liability.
Right.
So now what is she going to count on?
Exactly.
Right.
You see, it's like this chipping away, right? So that maybe now she'll look to the right thing now. But again, when she says, "I'm going back," it's not like, "I get it, God, I'm going back." It's like, "Oh, there's food. Let's go." So she's still not, I don't think she's getting it.
God does. In our desperation, he does tend to hand out an olive branch now and then.
Yeah, and you follow it, and then
you're right.
We're going to see that, I think. You know, but she doesn't see that she's left him, and she sees it another way, and of course she's bitter, and you know, again, some people never really fully walk away from the old when they come to Christ. Some people hold on to things when they come into their relationship with the Lord. But through the walk and through their times with Him, things get shed off. They start to see things. You know, sometimes they say, "Oh, I'm hanging on to this. I need to let go, but I didn't see it at first." You know, there are these struggles and there are these things that happen. And there's a growth process. There's a realization process to see that, "Oh, I didn't let go of that. Oh, I didn't see your hand here." You know, and I think there is this process going on with her. But everything that you hold on to from the old is going to have a pull.
Yeah.
It's going to create a pull. You know, and therefore there's going to be a struggle. And so another way of putting this is, you know, there is a maturing process going on. There's a shedding off of things and the realizing of things and embracing things. So Orpha was willing to go with Naomi at first, but to something that she did not, I think, fully embrace. "I'm going to go back to you with you to your people." But then Ruth, you know, she was all in. She's all in. And I think Naomi is coming back for not for all the right reasons at first. And again, she's bitter. She's not in a good place. And so, as we cover this chapter, we never see, like I said, indications of her seeing her part in this, which is, "I went where we are not supposed to go as a people." And then this hard time that has come on her, it's like, "God brought this on me." You know, but she doesn't see, "Okay, well, I did go to Moab. You know, we let our kids marry Moabites." You know, she doesn't even think about that.
And actually, we never hear her talk about that.
Yeah, we never hear her talk about it.
Kind of like when the prodigal is feeding the pigs and saying, well, back in my father's house, even the servants are better off than this.
Yeah.
He didn't say I shouldn't have left. I made a bad decision. He never expresses that.
Oh, no. It's not a one-to-one, but that particular realization is one-to-one.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to speed this up here because I only got like 5 minutes. So they make this journey back, you know, and we talked last time about they probably went with a caravan because it's not safe for two women to travel, and of course you've got the terrain that they're crossing and things like that. So they arrive in Bethlehem and Naomi is recognized, and people, it says, are stirred. And so Naomi, as we talked about a few minutes ago, she comes back with these two with this Moabite woman. You know, she's had a hard time, and I'm sure this shows on her. Mm-hmm. And she's come back, and she's not the same person. This person that was pleasant, you know, her name, you know, she was not that person now. She's, you know, and it says in verse 19, so both of them went until they came to Bethlehem, and when they had come to Bethlehem, all the city was stirred because of them, and the women said, is this Naomi? And she said to them, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. So, you know, and this was kind of, you brought it up a minute ago, and it's that, you know, people don't have a hard time usually being reacquainted with people that they've been away with for a while if everything has been going well for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they come back and they've graduated from college, they have a successful business, they've got a spouse and they have children and a wonderful family and everything. But you know, when you come back and your life has been one of hardship and tragedy, you know, do you really want to see anybody? Do you really want to talk to anybody? Mm-hmm. You know, because people are going to ask you, well, how you been? What's been going on with you? And they don't want to go through all that stuff. They don't want to talk about that, you know. And so Naomi, in her bitterness, she renames herself Mara, which means bitter, you know. And so she has physically come back to the land of promise, but she's worn, she's empty, she's bitter. You know, she's not pleasant and delightful anymore. There's no joy in her right now, you know. And she makes this statement: for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has witnessed against me and the Almighty has afflicted me? So she refers to God in two different terms here. You know, one, you know, the Almighty, that's El Shaddai, which really, to make a long story short, is the all-powerful God controlling everything, you know, at all times. And so he is the highest of all gods. You know, and he has dealt very hard with me.
Well, with the thing is on here is, you know, God's dealt harshly with me, but Ruth never acknowledges why God would deal harshly with her.
Right.
She never mentions, it's like, nobody loves me, everybody hates me, I'm going to eat worms. Well, maybe because you eat worms is why everybody hates you.
Yeah, she's not seeing the why. Exactly.
There's no acknowledgement of that. And, and in today's world, how many people bemoan the fact everybody's against them? Well, what did you do? Well, just because I took everybody's, you know, jackets when it was raining, I mean, what did I do? You know, I needed those jackets.
It's like the old saying. It's like the old saying from a movie, A Few Good Men. What do you want from me? Well, I want the truth. You can't handle the truth. A lot of people don't want to hear the truth,
yeah.
Or they want to hear it when it's somebody else, but they don't want to they don't want to go there when it's them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, she's not looking this way, you know. Yeah, the question is never asked about, you know, why would God do this to me? You know, in other words, was this consequences for bad actions?
She says she went out full. So that implies when she left Bethlehem, when Elimelech and she left Bethlehem, that she left full.
Mm-hmm.
She had a husband and two sons and
there was still the family.
Promise of a better life where we're going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, yeah. Yeah.
It reminds me of a lesson I learned in my younger days, that circumstance is not my God.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think that these things were, this was all about doing a work in Naomi. Again, this story is really about Naomi. And so the thing about it is, as Christians, we're not promised a problem-free life. You know, we're promised that God is there and He's working and moving in our lives and our situations, but we're not promised a problem-free life. You know? Let me see here. Now, the thing about it is, in spite of Naomi's problems and kind of where, how she sounds, she was able to be someone of influence. I mean, she very strongly impacted her two daughters. You know, and so much so that one of them was willing to go with her in spite of the argument that she gave to the other. And so they come back to Bethlehem, and so let me see here. So I think that everything that happened, again, is part of a process. I think the death of the husband, I think the death of the sons, I think all this, you know, everything that happened has been setting Naomi up and moving her back to where she's supposed to be. And we saw this with Job. When we went through Job, you know, Job didn't do anything wrong. And yet God literally points the devil at Job and says, "Hey, do you see this guy?" And allows all this stuff to happen to him. I mean, he says, "Okay, you can only go this far, but this is what you can do." Yeah. And all of this, it did a work in Job. It did a work in everybody that listened to those arguments.
All of his friends.
Yeah,
his wife.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing about it is everybody that reads this story since it was written, it's teaching all of us. And so God will allow things and situations to do a work in us.
In spite of us.
Mm-hmm. And other people that know us learn from this. I mean, these are the things that God does. We don't like it a lot of times when we're going through them. Most of the time we don't. We don't go, "Oh, wonderful," you know. But the thing about it is that when it's over and we look back at it, we go, "Wow, that was really good." We may go, "Okay, just don't do it that way again the next time." But you know, it's like, but this was really good, God. And although I didn't enjoy the process, I do like what you did with this. But we don't see that when we're in it. When we're in it, it's like, "Get me out of this. How long is this going to go on?" You know, kind of a thing. And so the thing about it is with this is that, you know, as I said, I think Naomi was on a journey. And the thing is that there were two provisions here that she has. One, the timing that they come back is at the time of the barley harvest. But the other one is she has another provision she's had it the whole time. And that's Ruth. We're going to see how that provision plays out, you know, in the following chapters. But Ruth has always been there. And that's part of the provision. How many times do we not see the provisions of God in the midst of the trial, and they're right in front of us the whole
bitter,
time?
I came back empty, and Ruth is thinking, "What am I, chopped liver?"
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so I think that this story is really a story of redemption. I Naomi will find joy again. I mean, those of us that have studied this, we've read, you know, the other chapters and looked at them, and so we know that it's going to get better for her, you know. And Ruth would find the God of Naomi. I mean, right now it's like, "I'm going back. I'll make, you know, your God my God." But it's not Jehovah is mine. It's like, "Your God is my God," but not, "Lord God Jehovah, I'm calling upon you." We don't hear that, right? And so she's things are being positioned here. And of course, Ruth would find another husband, you know, they would have children. And the thing about it is they didn't have kids in Moab. They were married, they didn't have any kids in Moab. She comes back here and now they have kids. Now she has kids. You know, So I think also that the story of Ruth is a bridge, bridge to Samuel. You know, in Judges we have a broken nation. You know, and but with Samuel we would see the establishment of a godly king, and a kingdom coming back to God. And so, and you know, as we've been reading these stories, I think that they do reflect our time now. I mean, as we went through Judges, it's like, oh gosh, does this not speak to where we are? And I think that this story does too. And the thing I think we need to take away is that God is there. Mm-hmm. God does redeem, and God places provisions for us. You know, in times of difficulty, but I think that there are consequences for actions. But but I think those consequences, God uses them to do a good work through them. And of course, the last thing here, and this was mentioned when Randy taught, is that, of course, with the story of Ruth, we go, you know, because Randy talked about the genealogy, you know, and so you have Ruth, a Moabite, and her husband in there, in a genealogy with David and with Jesus, and so, you know, Jesus's genealogy is a mix of all kinds of people. You know, but because of that, you know, it's Jesus is someone that we can all relate to, and he represents imperfect people. You know, the genealogy does represents imperfect people that are used by God, and so when you look at the genealogy, you see redemption, and redemption, I think, is this story here too. So, with that, let me close in prayer, and we'll go on and into the next part of the morning. So, Father, I thank you for our time. I thank you for the story of Ruth and all that we saw just in chapter 1. And I just thank you for all the stuff we're going to uncover in the following weeks. And just I pray it's something that we can take and look at our lives with, God, and it would impact us and show us things. And so we thank you for this, and we just pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.